This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Jordan, I tested positive last night, so
That
should have been the cold open right there. I'm hacking up a lung, I'm coughing, I'm in the basement.
So that's why we're not getting NPK today, is because doing that, you'll actually just vomit onto the microphone.
So you're CPK, California Pizza Kitchen, COVID Peter Keating.
I can't even drop into the sweet tones of NPK because my throat's gone, yeah.
So this is literally a cold open.
Wow.
Yeah, I tested positive. I hate it when people say the Rona. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I heard Donald Trump Jr. say that once, but it's not like Rice-a-Rona. It's like, I got the freaking COVID. I don't know. I'm cranky.
How is it interacting with your persistent gonorrhea?
You know, let me say this about that. When you tell people you've tested
that first,
I have an answer to that question. When you text or tell people I've tested positive, you have to tell them what you've tested positive for. Otherwise, I've found you'll get a barrage of jokes and really distasteful remarks about gonorrhea, chlamydia, and other things you may have tested positive for. Nobody assumes it's lead or, you know, something that's not social outcast stuff. It's just you stay up tested positive. It could be bad news.
We're not cold opening with Peter's gonorrhea.
We're absolutely keeping gonorrhea.
You know what they say about the Giants pass rush? Here today, gonorrhea tomorrow.
We don't need to double down on gonorrhea jokes. We don't.
If they got even one sack, I would clap.
Eight to shoot. Haw the runner. Loose ball. It's good. With 4.4 to go. Shannon.
Don't want to foul.
Shannon from the corner. And it's over. Gonzaga. The flipper still fits.
The cry goes up both far and near for underdog. Underdog.
Joe Namath, number 12, has been the one big sidelight. He's come down here and he says the Jets are going to win. In fact, he doesn't even predict it. He says, I guarantee a Jet victory.
Oh, my kid, I ain't even in the guys' league.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
Underdog. Underdog.
They're bigger, faster, stronger, more experienced, and on paper, they're just better.
Oh my goodness! The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby! Rich Strike in a stunning, unbelievable upset!
Shock and awe in college basketball!
Underdog!
Underdog!
I expect you boys to go out there and not take this team lightly, because I promise you, they're going to come at you with everything they've got.
Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed.
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Speed of lightning, roar of thunder, fighting all who rob or plunder. Underdog.
I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
Welcome to Underdogs. I'm Tom Haberstroh. That's Jordan Brenner and Peter Keating. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk some baseball aces later in the show. I think it's a lukewarm corner, maybe a feverish corner now because of Peter's illness. We're going to get into our Underdogs picks of the week. But first, we're going to get on the Zoom with Chris Raybon of the Action Network. Yes, we got Chris Raybon on the show from the Action Network and the Fantasy Flex podcast. Chris, what's up, man? Thanks for joining us.
What's going on, Tom? Thanks for having me.
So we got Peter here. We got Jordan. All of us have been fanboying out on your success this season and your writing and your pods. It really is remarkable to be this far in the game that you have, to be writing about, you know, betting and picks and analysis and analytics for several years, and you're still way smarter than everybody else. Because at this point, Chris, I'm looking at your Twitter account, and I'm sure you have updated numbers for me, but at some point on Sunday afternoon, you were 28-6-1 on your picks.
What?
30-10 since the start of the season.
Oh my my God.
Wow.
And you know, it's funny. Right after I posted that, I think it was, that was the early slate. So I think then it was the 4 p.m. Eastern slate. I'm pretty sure I lost every bet on that slate. I mean, you know, it was like 4 or 5, but not ideal. And then won the Sunday night, because I got a good number with San Francisco. They closed that as a favorite, but I got them as a dog, 2.5-point dog.
Is that like talking about a perfect game while it's happening? Is that what happened here?
I always try to, you know.
He's been like 10-2 every week.
I'm just kind of as like at an off as you guys. Like I had a crazy NBA heater this season. I was telling everybody, I was like, I'm never going to do this again. Like, this is never going to happen again. I think I went like 16-1 in NBA in like April or May or something like that. I was like, this is never going to happen again. And so it kind of happened again. It's happening again with NFL. So a lot of luck involved.
You may think Chris is smart, but you know what's even who's smarter? The guy who follows all of Chris's picks and just casually puts money on them like I do. So I'm enjoying I've been enjoying the fruits of Chris's success since day one of this season as well.
We've been picking underdogs every week. And I think if you prorate my successes over the course of the entire season, you will not hit 30 wins. So, right. I mean, I'm due to go about 28-150 at the pace that I'm going.
It's pretty good.
So,
yeah, that's pretty good. I think even his 4 o'clock slate was better than that.
Yeah,
that would be tough.
No doubt.
So Chris, take us a little bit into your process. That's what really intrigues me, right? Like, we see people broadcast their picks, their results, but take us inside your head. How do you, I know you and Sean Kerner both project numbers and you build a lot of it off that, but just for the average fan, how do you go about finding an edge, whether it's player props, games, et cetera? What do you do on a weekly basis?
Well, it's two different processes for, you know, regular games and then props, but I'll talk about games first. My big thing with games is I'm always looking for points and I'm always looking for unders first and foremost. So like I come into the week, like maybe once in a while I'll bet on a favorite, but I'm just looking for points because the NFL is, there's too much variance in the NFL for me to confidently say this team is X amount of points better than the other team. Like it's just, and what happens is, you know, books take in usually anywhere from 2/3 to 3/4 of the money on favorites. Generally, like it changes game to game, obviously, but like if you see a half point, that half point is almost always going to screw you for the favorite. Like if a book thinks the line should be 3, they'll probably make it 3.5. And, you know, so I'm always looking for underdogs. And then I like to look at things that aren't going to be as it's harder to quantify by the public and by other people's models. So I look at pressure a lot. You know, I think pressure has a drastic impact on NFL games. Just, you know, which teams can rush for and still get pressure, which teams are going to blitz a lot, how do quarterbacks play against the blitz, against pressure, against the four-man rush, things like that. And I'm looking at trends as well. I'll never bet on a trend blindly, but I think what trends do, number one, almost all trends, they're only going to be profitable toward the underdog side. Like I don't know if I have 5 like trends that support favorites. And, you know, we use our Bet Labs tool at Action Network, but I just kind of look for things like, you know, teams coming off a loss, teams coming off a shutout, you know, second straight home game, just different spots, because a lot of times what you see is, you know, it's human. There's human nature involved. You know, a team has plays poorly one week, they're going to play better the next week, and whether that's, you know, effort or whatever it is, it's something that's not being accounted for in the spread. So whatever, you know, it's not a placebo effect, because you see it year after year. We have ways to kind of measure if it's going to be predictive in the future, and it is. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. And then player props, it just really comes down to individual matchups. I'm still usually looking for unders, unless early in the season, I do tend to target a lot of rookie receivers because they haven't broken out yet. You know, Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, guys, as their usage is increasing, I'll bet some overs, but usually just looking for unders in good matchups and or tough matchups or just situations that I see where I think a player is not going to hit his line. But the main thing is I'm pretty much looking for unders and dogs and trying to get value that way.
So you're basically a hater, which is great. Yeah. You're like, you're like, this guy's not going to catch that many passes. This guy's not going to throw that many yards. And that team that you think is really good is actually not that good.
And let me say this about catching passes in particular, because a lot of people don't realize this. So when you're betting receiving props in general, right? Like, if you think it's a tough matchup for the receiver, bet the yardage under. But like a reception under, a guy could have a good matchup and go under his receptions because he's just averaging more yards per catch. So like, if you think like, oh, this guy, you know, has a great matchup, I'm going to bet the over on his receptions. Yeah, but he might just catch 4 passes for 100 yards instead of 6 for 80 because he's just picking up bigger chunks, you know? So that's one thing that I don't know if people understand quite when they're betting receiving props, but like receptions and yardage aren't the same. The only time you would bang both of them is if you just expect the player to literally play a lot less snaps. But if it's just a matchup based thing, a lot of times you want to go with the yardage because like, I remember there's a game with Terry McLaurin last year against Darius Slay. We could go Broncos week one, Metcalf against Patrick Surtain. Metcalf was held to like 36 yards, right? But he caught 7 balls because he couldn't get nowhere. So if you had said, oh, you know, Surtain's going to be on Metcalf, that's a tough matchup, I'm going to bet the under on Metcalf, you would have been wrong on the receptions because if the offense is not picking up a bunch of yards, they're going to have to throw more passes. So that's something to keep in mind.
Except for friggin' Josh Jacobs in week one, right? that one 16-yard.
That, oh, my God. Right. Yeah. And Bolden got hurt, too. And but then the next week, both of them hit, I think. So
sure did.
I thought Jordan was going to say, except for Kenny Golladay.
Oh, we don't talk about Kenny Golladay on this podcast.
We seem to bring him up every week until we just banned talking about him because every under bet imaginable applies to him. So it's not useful for figure out which direction to
Wait,
go.
Is he in the NFL? I don't think I've heard of it. I'm a Giants fan too, by the way.
You're in good. Well, I was gonna say good company, but maybe not great company.
Oh man, I mean, our receivers. I mean, Jesus. I had some Darius Slayton on the showdown slate. He played 14 snaps, but of course, did nothing.
Tony's got to get back in there. I mean, at least he can get a little separation.
Yeah, I'm done with this with the Giants.
So, guys, listening to Chris. It strikes me as we've had Danny Sheridan on the show, comes at this from a completely different perspective. No analytics, all human nature, and yet their conclusions are so similar about...
I shouldn't say no analytics, it's just that... Like,
no, Danny. Danny.
Okay.
You're
an analytics. We talked a lot about human nature in what I was saying too, though.
True. Yeah. You blend it, but Danny isn't sitting there with a spreadsheet and modeling and doing player projections. But the point is, you guys are coming. You come to a lot of the same conclusions from different avenues about the value of underdogs. Basically, only looking for underdogs and unders. And as this is the underdogs podcast, why do you think, after all this time, with so many more people betting, with so much more information out there, there's still such value in underdogs? Why hasn't the market shifted to reflect where that is? What's your theory?
You just said it. So many more people betting. That's it.
Dumb people.
It's casual people. We call them casual here. It's 2022. You got to be inclusive, man. Shouts come out, dumb people. Listen, man. I used to be dumb too. I was a fantasy only guy. Like, I didn't even know if I was like, Action hit me up to take this job. I probably had bet like 10 times in my whole life, you know, coming like I was a fantasy guy. So like, I know I've been there and how to like build and like learn from scratch. But I also think that's what helps me is like not having a lot of those biases, because I just approached it like, okay, I got to learn this from scratch. But I think, you know, looking at the numbers and, you know, now that information is out there, whether you go on the Action Network app, whether you go on pretty like a bunch of different betting websites or whatever, analytics websites, you're usually going to see some form of like the ticket count, ticket percentage and the money percentage or the handle percentage on each game. And if you just look at that, you're going to see more often than not that the favorite is getting the majority of the money. Whether they're getting the majority of the bets is a different story, but the money is what's going to drive you know, the line to move. And so favorites are getting a majority of the money, and especially, you know, weight money. You know, a lot of people come and they just want to bet, you know, they don't even think about it till like Saturday night, Sunday morning. And then they throw a few bucks, and it's usually on the favorite because it's, you know, people are looking at it and they, and I think people have an idea that like the line is fair. And so like, okay, I'm just going to pick the team that's going to win or whatever the reasons may be. And then that's just how you're getting value on the underdogs, but not even just that. It's also the NFL is so unpredictable. And I spend a lot of time, and this is something that helps me from, you know, modeling players and fantasy and all that stuff, is like understanding the different points at which a stat is predictive, right? Like we talk about a lot in fantasy, touchdown regression, right? Like if a player puts up a certain stat line one year, you know, catches, yards, touchdowns, for example, the catches and yards are a lot more likely to repeat the next season than the touchdown. Like we've seen Mike Evans have like a year where he scored like three touchdowns. And then the next year he came back and scored 10 and he had like five, then he had 12, you know, like touchdowns aren't gonna repeat. So it's the same thing. There's just, there's the same thing with a lot of things that go into point differential, turnovers, interceptions, red zone performance, third down performance, all of these things. They're high variance, but they have a large impact on winning. And so, you know, when you're modeling a game and you're saying, you know, this team should beat this team by 8 points, like how sure are you really? Because it takes a lot for you to get to that point where a team is 8 points better than another. And a lot of that is probably luck and things that aren't necessarily going to repeat. Right. Noise. Exactly. And yeah. So that's why I always start looking for Doug. And there's very rare occasions where I end up taking favorite. Usually the favorites I take are like under a field goal where it's just, I'm kind of saying I'm betting on this team to win a game, essentially. Like, you know, 1 and 2 are not likely numbers to hit in terms of where they land. So I'll do that. But generally we are just overconfident in our own predictions and projections. And that lends value, that combined with the fact that there's more money coming in on favorites, those two factors, they seem to always be true. Like it's, you know, unless a whole bunch of casual people start betting on underdogs, and unless like, you know, 90, like all of a sudden everyone who's like predicting games is like in the top 10 percentile of modeling, and they start understanding these things that even people that are good at modeling and that have their own models don't really understand how to apply the different regression. Cause like, I know, for example, like something like point differential or like, let's say fumble rate could take like 100 games to stabilize. So it's like, you have to add like 100 games of regression, but the teams don't play 100 games in a season, Chris. Yeah, that's my point. So you're really only taking like 5% of the real fumble rate in a season and 95% regression. Then interceptions, it would be like 30 games. You know, passing yards, it would be like 5, you know, it's different.
Writing this down. You're big on Aaron Jones then because of the fumble at the 1 yard line last game. And so that's just 5%. Don't read too much into it. Chris, I want to ask you, cause you just mentioned that you'd only done like 10 bets, a handful of bets before you took the job at Action Network. That might seem crazy to people that you're so good at this or making picks and finding the edge. And yet you kind of fell into it.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously, you know, when they reached out to hire me, they saw, you know, the skills kind of translated over, like, you know, maybe I was like a Taysom Hill or something, you know, it's like, he can do whatever we need him to do.
Chris Raybon, the Taysom Hill of fantasy and betting. Yes.
Now I'm better than that. Fuck that.
We're going to have to ask Chad if that's what he saw in you.
That's selling yourself short. Taysom Hill. Yeah.
I think it really comes down to like, when you do understand the numbers aspect, because I'm modeling, like when I'm like, I have a spreadsheet and it's predicting the teams, like the team stats and the player stats. So like I have everything in one place and everything's all interrelated. And so I kind of understand the different numbers and the different regression constants and all those different things. And I think that just helps, you know, and playing DFS too, it just understanding variance, right? It's just, that's just such a big part of the NFL, and it sounds super nerdy, but if you start to understand that, you see why, like, for example, like, you know, nobody could understand why anyone would pick the Colts last week. And, you know, I mean, if you just looked at the Colts, they were horrible. Through 2 weeks, they tied the Texans and lost to the Jaguars. But look at all the luck that happens in an NFL game, because the Colts honestly weren't the better team against the Chiefs either. They won the game, but they weren't the better team. But look at in the NFL, you can only escape luck for so long. It's like the Chiefs, you know, backup kicker. He's gonna fuck up at some point. And he did. And then because of that, then they got in their heads and then they're going fake on 3rd and 11s. And then, you know, it's just, and then of course, and you get luck with penalties. You never, like, how many referees don't call that penalty on Chris Jones? A lot, probably. Right. You know, so there's just so much luck involved in an NFL game. And that's what lends itself to underdogs. And it's like, it after the fact, it's always so obvious. Like, oh yeah, of course, like, you know, this team is gonna like would benefit from a few fumbles, missed kick here, and they could stay close to pull off the upset. But coming into the game, you know, most people that are betting aren't even thinking about that. And they're just looking at the teams and like, okay, this team is better than this team. And
it almost seems like people going into games think a team has to be better than another team to bet on them.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
That's not true.
Nope.
The sum total of luck, right, just has to be big enough for the worst team to have a pretty good chance, right?
Yeah.
But people, but like you just said, people only get that after they see it happen. Going into it, they're like, what? You know, Colts, Chiefs.
There's a standard deviation. I'm sure people are familiar with that statistic, you know, somewhat, but like the standard deviation of point differential in an NFL game across all NFL games is usually like in the 13 to 15 point range, which means like, even if you are, let's say you're, I don't know, the Chiefs or whatever, and you're 13 points better than the Texans, third of the time, that could flip. Like, two thirds are within one standard deviation of the mean on either side. So it's like, even something like that, two touchdowns, you're going to see a lot of those flips. So now imagine, because most underdogs, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, there's going to be so much luck from week to week.
But that also means you have to stay in this. You have to be willing to stay in this for a pretty long time for all of that to even out, for the skills to show up, for your bets to pay off. Like everything could go wrong because the standard differential, you know, standard mm-hmm. deviation of point differential is bigger than any spread you're going to see. So the spreads probably are screaming bet the underdogs more often than most people think, but you gotta have the patience to stay in that, to let that pay off.
I mean, I don't know. I was always good from the start. Never. No, I was kidding. I mean, no, like, what's crazy is I'm not even bragging because I realize how hard it is, but I actually have been lucky enough to be pretty good from the start. Like I've had a bunch of like heaters, haven't really had an extended like losing streak or anywhere near the amount of, you know, the heaters I've had. But I do think just betting on underdogs and unders makes it a lot more consistent, because remember, sports books, they've been in business for what, over like hundreds of years, 100 years now, like almost, like, yeah, I don't know the exact, but like sports books,
I believe there were some serious dark age parlays going on.
Yeah, I watched Peaky Blinders. They were okay, taking bets in Peaky Blinders
probably since the ancient Olympics, right? I mean, definitely
the modern era of casinos, Vegas, whatever you want to call it, sports books have been around for decades and decades, pushing hundreds of years, 100 years maybe. But, you know, they have to sustain their business, right? And how are they doing that? It's because, remember, most people are betting on favorites. Most people are betting on overs. And, you know, you can't, like, as a business that operates as big as these books do, you also can't be like super volatile and just say, oh, we're going to hang in there till the skills. But like, you got to be able to make some type of money somewhat consistently. And I think being on that side, on the unders, on the dogs, does help in that regard. And because like I'll see, and the one thing is interesting is that we don't really get the same information as much for props, obviously, because they have a lower handle. But like every once in a while, I'll hear like a stat. Like I think last week, Simon Hunter told me that the week before last week, so not against the Colts, but against the Chargers, I think Travis Kelce's over was like 100% bet, like, or 98% or 100% bet money on the over, which first of all makes no sense. You're going against Derwin James. So I don't know what people, so, but that's the point. People aren't thinking about that. But
right.
Books are setting these lines knowing this, and it's not changing. And so it's kind of like, I think the best example I could probably give you, the best comparison is credit card companies, right? It's like credit card, you could game the credit card company system, get all their points, pay off your balance, and then they would be fucked. But it's a it's a law of human nature that not everyone's going to do it. Some people are going to do it, but a lot of people that are going to open a credit card are going to let that balance build up, and they're going to
credit card casuals,
right? Yeah. They'll accrue those interest charges, and then the companies don't even need 100% of that money. They're already profiting off just like a small percentage of that interest because they create. They create a buffer, and the books do the same thing. Remember, they're charging you 10% to bet some, and with some props and things like that, and money lines and futures, sometimes it's 15%. Sometimes, and that's another thing people don't understand. They don't understand like juice and something like I will bet on. So the one time I do bet favorites or quote unquote favorites is like in props, I'll bet juiced up props. Like if I think something should be like minus 200 and it's minus 170, I'll bang that all day. Because that's just value. That's value. And I can predict that a lot more than, just like, oh, this team is definitely going to win by, and not only win, but win by this many points. But I can say, oh yeah, this guy, there's a good chance like Josh Jacobs, like there's a 70% chance Josh Jacobs is not catching three balls. That's a lot easier to predict.
So listening to Chris talk, I keep coming back to thinking about our work on Giant Killers. Chris, if you're not familiar, we sort of came together as a group back at ESPN in the day predicting NCAA tournament upsets.
Under
and
Chad, I want to say, yes. Working with Chad.
My condolences.
Chad was on NFL at that point. We were siloed. But, we've done this for over 15 years now. And in the process, we've learned a lot of lessons because really it's a study in why unlikely things happen and how often they do. But what's interesting about the tournament, and I think how our work has changed in March, is that it's become so trendy to pick upsets that actually a lot of the value we bring now, it was where we made our hay this past March, was in warning people off certain trendy upsets that don't fit the. We learned, for instance, that high variance play leads to more upsets, right? High risk, high reward strategies, shooting more threes, forcing more turnovers, getting more offensive rebounds, anything that wins the possession game, right? So a team last year like South Dakota State, as Tom would say, big jackrabbit.
Yeah, big jackrabbit. Big Chris, jackrabbit. Everyone was on the jackrabbit train, and it was big tobacco. We were like, man, you guys,
right.
They're brainwashing people just because they're the South Dakota jackrabbits. Just their name.
A lot of what we said is, no, don't take that trendy 12-5 game. Stick with it, and there's leverage in that.
Yes.
It sounds like in the NFL, we're not at that point where there's conventional wisdom the other way to profit off. Maybe DFS.
But let's go. Let's talk NFL. Let's talk about it. Because so one thing, and again, I can't say enough how valuable, our tool Action Labs is, because it allows you to go back to like the early 2000s and just kind of look at filter for different kind of trends and things like that. You can look at the money and teams' record against the spread and all these different situations. And one thing we have seen and is that when you get a trendy underdog, so that means usually an underdog getting more than 55% of the tickets, into that 60% range, or underdog getting not the money a little less, but I think when you see a public underdog, like just straight up bet ticket wise, those underdogs actually do have, a decreased rate of covering. So there is still that situation. It's just that it happens a lot rarer. Like in any given week, there'll only be, off the top of my head, like we're this week, I think maybe the Broncos are a public dog. Like, I don't even, there's very rare instances of, a team being a public dog.
Well, like the Dolphins this week, do people think the Dolphins come 3-0 coming off the the marathon game against the Bills and then going against Cincy here on Thursday night? I feel like that might be a trendy pick because one team is 3-0.
Or does the Tua news sort of deflate some of that?
So interestingly enough, Miami's actually getting just right around 50-50, 51% of the bets. But okay. I do think that partly is to do with the Tua news, because I was reading on NFL Reddit that like somebody, after the Dolphins beat the Bills, like that later that night, was like, oh yeah, like the Dolphins opened as like 2.5 or 3-point underdogs. Gamblers, get your money ready. And of course, like, this is not gambling Reddit. This is just NFL Reddit. So like it's already a fish, but I kind of like to look at stuff like that to give me a sense of the public opinion. And so I do think that, like, if the Tua injury hadn't come out, I do think that the Dolphins would have been a trendy pick. But again, this comes back to like just handicapping NFL games. And like when I handicapped that Bills Dolphins game, first of all, shout to the under. I don't know how we got there after that first half, but we got there. thanks, Josh Allen, for like one hop in that throw on fourth and goal.
Well, I think you wrote in your picks, though, that didn't you play the under? And I think you said the number of things that have to go right
to
hit an over like this. So that's it.
Yeah. And so, but when I handicapped that game, or when I'm analyzing that game, or, you know, gathering data, inputting data and adding to my model, right, for that game, and this is going to, like, a more casual better might not understand this. I'm sure a lot of your listeners will understand this, but like Buffalo won that game. Like, for all intents and purposes, like in my data, Buffalo won that game. Like, Buffalo outgained Miami, what, over 2-1. Buffalo, all they did, essentially, a lot of the things that went wrong for Buffalo were like more like things that aren't as repeatable. Like, Josh Allen fumbles a snap at the end of the first half. You know, they have just a complete meltdown at the end of the game. Josh Allen one hops a throw. He makes 63 throws and happens to one hop. One on fourth and goal at the goal line, you know, like,
right.
Dave Davis drops the pass.
So that in the models that determine how good a team is going to play going forward, that game makes Buffalo look better, not worse, even though they happen to lose the game. The sustainable stuff worked to Buffalo's advantage. The stuff that was crazy and random and unsustainable is what cost them that game. Right.
Absolutely.
And that's why they have six. And that's what I was trying to say. You know, that's one of that's why they have 16 game seasons, right? It would be really bad if that were a playoff game, but it's not. Buffalo's still as good as they Buffalo still looks as good as they did before, I would say.
And in the playoffs, I think I will say this, in the playoffs, I think you have to I open it up a little more. Like, in the playoffs, that's probably I would say actually the time I'd be most willing to bet a favorite, because in the playoffs, I think it's just such an individual case by case basis, and like there are certain times when like you're going to get every team's best effort. You should. And every team's focus. And so like Buffalo, for whatever, going up to Miami, it's hot. It's week three. They're 2-0. Like, they're chilling. Yeah, they're coming off a blowout. Like, everyone's sure bowing down to the Buffalo Bills, number one in everybody's power rankings. That's a letdown spot. And that's where a lot of times the analytics community doesn't always jive with, like you said, some people who are just able to kind of do this without as many numbers. And I have a lot of respect for those people. And I incorporate that aspect as well, because there's so much human nature. What I like to do is try to quantify the human nature, you know, like I look at, okay, teams coming off both a multi-game winning streak tend to not cover as much. Teams coming off a blowout tend to cover a lot more. Winless teams early in the season cover a lot more. Effort, human nature.
But this isn't feel. This isn't gut feeling. Like you're saying, you're saying it's human nature stuff, but what you're doing is you're taking human nature theories, hypotheses, and then using the actual data to verify that these gut feelings actually bear out in the data.
That's analytics to me. Like, that's Moneyball. I was actually a baseball, I knew baseball stats and sabermetrics and Bill James and Moneyball before I even knew football stats. Because back when, like, baseball had stats when football didn't have stats. Like, I used to buy these, I don't know if you remember these, the company was, I think, Stats Incorporated. And they used to release these books for every different sport with, like, just all the stats. And like football, you just had like no stats. Like, it's just like the most basic stats. So.
Right. The stats handbooks for baseball were full of all of these advanced statistics that Bill James had invented and put out there for free. And then the stats handbooks for football is like looking at the sporting news. I mean, there were none. Yeah.
It was just like, oh, let's read some scouting reports about incoming college players. Meanwhile, the minor league baseball got its own handbook with projections. It's like major league projections and like 3-year forecasts and shit. So
Chris, while we still have you, I want to pivot to daily fantasy really quick. And real quick for our listeners who aren't familiar, daily fantasy sports, if you haven't been inundated with 1,000 DraftKings commercials over the past, few years, it's you pick a lineup each week. You get a salary cap. You have certain positions you need to fill. So it's about finding value. It's about, you're not just picking the best players every week. You have to apportion your salary cap out by position. Now, if you're not familiar with that landscape, the underdog in daily fantasy sports is the general public. There are professionals in this realm who are just so good. And I'll tell you from personal experience, I've been playing DFS for years. I think I'm a pretty knowledgeable sports fan. I read the right people. I look at the right analytics. It is the hardest thing for me to be successful in any form of fantasy, gambling, anything like that. So
are you tearing up here? Are you getting emotional?
And by the way, I say that as a regular listener of the Fantasy Flex podcast with Chris Raybon and Sean Kerner. It's anything I could do to get an edge, I do. And it's the only
thing that's kept him going. Otherwise, yes. He'd be announced. He's almost announcing his retirement from Daily Fantasy here, but
it's just so hard. It's so hard in this DFS game.
Right. I want Susan Waldman to come out and just, you know, really explain the emotion of what I'm going through. But Chris, is there any hope for the average person in daily fantasy? Or quite frankly, is it better to just move on and start betting props because you're not competing against other pros at that point? You're just competing against the house. How do you see that world?
Because there's so many more props these days. I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, you can bet whatever prop, whatever the hell you want.
How do you see that world? How do I stand a chance against somebody who's submitting 150 lineups and just, you know, knows game theory like the back of their hand?
Well, I'm always have a sweet spot for DFS, so I would never say stop playing it. But I would say this, like, first of all, I think you have to understand what it is and what your goal is. So, like, DFS, and now that I understand betting as well as I do, like, DFS to me is like a nine-leg parlay in a lot of ways, like setting up a lineup. And not that you always need all nine legs to hit, like a real parlay, but, you know, you do need a certain number of those to hit depending on the contest you enter. If you're in a large field tournament, maybe you need all nine to hit. If you're in cash games, you probably need five or six to hit. So I think that's how you kind of have to look at it. But I think the biggest like advice I could give in DFS now is kind of the same thing as betting, right? It's that what happens in DFS is that people, a lot, too many people, I think, look at the Vegas lines as gospel, and then they start setting lineups and stacking games based on those lines. Like, I remember I tweeted out like a joke a couple of weeks ago, like, you know, like, I think it was in reference to that Chiefs Chargers game. It's like, you know, me as a bettor is like, bet the under on Chiefs Chargers. It's like 53. And then me as a DFS player would be like, oh, stack this game. It's the total 53. Right? But in reality, and the under hit, by the way. So I think that you have to kind of remember that there's not only is there a standard deviation of like two touchdowns in terms of, you know, just NFL results, but when a game, like if there's the same standard deviation in terms of how the actual game plays out versus the Vegas line, right? So when a line, you know, goes under, it usually goes under by on average, like a touchdown, or if it goes over, it doesn't just go over by like a point. On average, it goes over by like a touchdown, same thing for the spread. So you have to remember that, like, you know, just like in betting, you're going to be looking for value. You're going to be looking for underdogs. You're going to be looking for situations that, you know, the market is kind of on one side and the book is on the other side. And you have to kind of be on that side. The same thing applies to DFS. Cause if you're just stacking the games that you think are going to be that Vegas says is the highest scoring, as we know, there's going to be a lot of error in that. And then same thing with like, okay, we know that, you know, running backs need positive game scripts for the most part. Well, we also know that a lot of favorites aren't going to cover. And in fact, we know underdogs cover at a higher rate than favorites. Just like if you blindly bet underdogs, you would be in a better place than if you blindly bet favorites. And so you have to remember that same concept applies to DFS. Where, and I think that would help a lot of people, is just like, you can't only just look at, like, you can't go back to being like this, like basic, oh my God, okay, this game is going to be high scoring. Let me stack it. Or let me pick this running back because he's a home favorite. Well, should he really be a home favorite? You know, like, should this team be a less of a favorite or an underdog? You know, so that's the best advice I could give in DFS.
Chris, we got to wrap up here soon, but I want to ask you, you mentioned Action Labs and Bet Labs with Action Network. I feel like that's kind of this the superpower is for the casuals to make their way into non-casual category. So what does that offer the audience, and what can you learn in those subscriptions that you can't get elsewhere?
So what it offers, and it's Action Labs, and you can go to actionnetwork.com and look it up. It's on the site. But you know, if you subscribe to it, essentially what you can do is you can go back through nearly two decades of data and filter for just about anything, and then save anything that you want. So for example, you know, when the Colts last week we're playing the Chiefs, right? Like there would be a section on the side where it would have automatically would pop up, would say, you know, teams coming off a blowout the next week. And it would give the stats and, you know, how much they're covering. And, you know, if I click it, I can go into the trend. It shows me all the games. I can adjust it. I could filter. It is over 100 different things to filter for. You can look at rest. You can look at divisional matchups. You can look at the quarterbacks, the coaches, anything you want. And so really the way I use it the most, not only just to save trends to, you know, so I don't, you know, remind me in the future, but the way I use it is to gut check any bet I want to make, you know? Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, I want to bet on the Arizona Cardinals this week. But you know, like, is that, you know, on paper that makes some sense to me just based on the matchups. But now let me go check out, you know, the trends. And then I go to Bet Labs and I see, okay, four saved trends that I've kind of created over time. One, Baker Mayfield is 11-22 is a favorite. Cliff Kingsbury is 14-3 as an underdog. Matt Rhule is 3-10 as a favorite. And then I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to bet the fucking Cardinals this week. And there's nothing on the Panthers, by the way, at the other side. So like a lot of times if I see like a conflicting one, that's when I do more research. And that's when I really want to gut check my pick. And that's what also helps me to avoid some of the trap picks, you know, is that sometimes you might think a side is right and there just might be something you haven't thought of or whatever. And, but you can kind of go in and kind of search the same situation and recreate that situation. And you're going to have two decades of data to now tell you, has this been a smart pick in the past or not? So yeah, that's what I think, that's the best way to use it, I would say.
I have to like fan PK from over here. Like, Peter, are you okay? Like all the different filters you can do on this thing.
I've been pretty quiet. Just because I'm spending all of my time here just nodding. Yeah, I want to do that. I'm going to get into that. I'm going to do that. That's right. Bill James handbooks from the 1990s. That's right. That's right. That's right. I got a couple here. I'm just nodding.
Hey.
We've got lots to chew on. We have coming out of this, we're going to do some picks on underdogs, our weekly underdogs picks, which is basically any team that is a 3.5 point dog or longer, we have to do a draft and pick those teams. So
ooh,
of
like
these
that.
Picks, I'm just curious. I want to know. Yeah, we got Miami +4. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville.
Wait a minute. Who has the first pick?
I'm getting Raybon's pick.
I believe I have the first pick.
Yeah, I know, but right. I want to hear Raybon what he likes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Jordan.
Jordan's getting an advantage.
Just
this is great.
Whatever he says. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Go ahead.
Miami
yeah.
+4. Jacksonville +6.5. Jets +3.5. Seattle +4.5. Houston +5.5. New England +9.5. There's six of them.
I already bet Baltimore at 3.5, but I guess that moved to 3.
It did. Yeah. As of right now,
I would take of those. Gotta go Houston. They're still hungry for a win. They're at home. That Chargers team lost Bosa. Like everyone's hurt. And I don't think Houston's quite as bad as people think. Like, I don't think they're
Damian Pierce. Let's go.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, I would take Houston out of those, especially because, you know, it's still above the, you know, like it's above the 3, it's above the 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Houston for me.
And it moved. I think it's now 5.5, but it was 4.5. So I think, I actually go in the other direction. Is it?
Yeah. That's a game I would imagine like the public is like, oh, no way the Chargers are losing 2 in a row after they lost to Jacksonville. You know, but it's not going to be easy for the Chargers. I mean, you lose that kind of talent and, you know, if Keenan Allen is back, you know, obviously that helps them. But I think this Houston team playing that zone defense, they're getting pressure somehow, which I was kind of surprised to see, like without blitzing, they're getting a decent amount of pressure. So yeah, Houston for me.
It's all lovey, baby. So I love it.
they should have won that game last week, man. Can't believe that.
And week one, they had a tie, right? Against Indianapolis.
Oh yeah. I mean, they covered that. But last week it was like they needed to win the cover essentially and they blew it.
Yeah.
Chris Raybon on Twitter at Chris Raybon, R-A-Y-B-O-N. Man, that was awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, and keep that heater going, man. We are right behind you. I know Jordan's rooting for it because he is just copying your picks for himself. But thanks so much for joining us and sharing all your wisdom, man.
Oh, man, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so for dogs of the week, scoreboard, have to mention the scoreboard here. Sorry, Peter. 9 points for me. Jordan, you have 5 points. And Peter, you have 2 points. Why are those point totals the way they are? Well, on the weekly dogs picks, this is how it works. We make picks on the dogs of the NFL schedule where we're looking at more than a field goal underdog pick. So it has to be 3.5 points or longer. And we only have 6 on the board currently as we're recording this. And if your team, your underdog team covers, you get a point. If they win outright, you get another point. And if it has a touchdown or longer odds, then you get a third point. So a maximum of three points per pick. And I did well again last week. Just want to note, it's been a great season for me so far. I think I'm 5-1 against the spread so far. And I'd like to continue this, but I can't continue it going with Chris Raybon's pick because I don't have the first pick this week. It's Jordan. You have the first pick. Then me, then Peter has 2 picks in a row, then me again at the 5, and then you rounding out at 6 with whatever's left over. So you better nail this first pick.
It's quite a difficult week. There are only 6 games for us to choose from in our 6 picks. There are 5 games that, as of this recording on Wednesday, are exactly 3 points, which fall just below the threshold of our being able to pick them, unless we change the rules. But seeing as we're not going to change the rules.
No, we're not going to just change the rules just because you happen to have the 6th pick this week.
Wait a minute. If we did, why? Because you're dying to pick Tennessee? I mean, what would we even gain if we changed the rules? So stop kvetching. Get to your pick. Let's go. Come on.
I know you want to take the Bears +3 against the Giants, but
I'm sorely tempted to bet that.
Sorely. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't call me sorely. Yeah.
With the first pick in week 4, after deep, careful consideration, lots of spreadsheets, really, I've been crunching the numbers, I will take the Houston Texans against the Chargers.
Free advice.
They are getting 5.5 points. Why?
They're still hungry for a win. They're at home. That Chargers team lost Bosa. Everyone's hurt. And I don't think Houston's quite as bad as people think.
Thanks, Chris. I agree. That's my pick.
Wow.
Wow.
All right. Well, you're picking my Texans for my yearly underdog pick on the Houston Texans. So it seems you're jumping on the bandwagon, or you're just jumping on the Chris Raybon bandwagon.
Yeah, and you're picking my breakout candidate, Davis Mills. I don't know if I ever said that before, but he's gonna throw for a lot of touchdowns.
He has a better chance to break out into hives than he does any sort of like high level performance. Okay.
Okay, Matt Ryan.
Yeah, you're really sticking your neck out there for Davis Mills. He has an amazing neck. Okay, I'm gonna go with on the second pick. I'm going to go with the New England Patriots +9.5.
Oh!
I am going to get that extra boost once they make the upset. And I'm going to say one more thing about this pick here is the fact that Brian Hoyer is filling in for Mac Jones, who is overrated. I think Mac Jones is not a good quarterback. And I feel like the dip from Mac Jones, I think his QBR Mac Jones this season is like 25 or something like that. It's not a big drop off.
Look, any chance you have to bet on Brian Hoyer, you clearly have to take it.
You have to take it. And you know what? We don't have, that's the only booster
pick of the week, the dog pick of the week, because none of these picks are a touchdown or longer besides that one. So we didn't have any of those last week. I can't leave that off the board. I'm going to take New England 9.5 at Green Bay. It was 10.5. Now it's 9.5 because people like me are loving the Patriots. Let's go.
Peter, back to back.
All right. Well, with my first pick, I'm going to take the Dolphins +4 at Cincinnati.
Wow.
Look, here's the deal. In the past 20 years, teams who have played the Giants or Jets in New York and then come back to play on short rest are 5-24 against the spread. It's a tough situation for any team, including, and that applies to the Cowboys too, but Cincinnati just played the Jets and they're going to come back and play on Thursday night. And again, we'll know that by the time it ends. But look, I think all of the normal rules about Miami due for a letdown coming off their past win, those don't apply. The whole world is acting in part because of what we just heard Chris talk about how all of the unsustainable factors, all the luck broke Miami's way. And for all intents and purposes, statistically, Buffalo won that game. I think a lot of the analysis and a lot of the world is treating this game as though Miami still has a lot to prove, especially because they're one of only a couple of undefeated teams left in the league. Nobody really believes in them. So there is no chance there's going to be a letdown. I also, thinking about the Jordan Brenner theory that if you bank a couple of wins that you might not deserve.
Worked out for the Giants. Yep, okay.
That might actually be enough to get you to play or help you play a little better. And if there's any team that you can apply that to, Tua and Tyreek Hill, these are emotional guys ready to step up.
All right, moving on to your next pick.
With the fourth pick in the weekly dogs draft, the Peter Keatings select.
I'm going to punish myself. And if this doesn't work out again, I'm going to never pick them again.
You can't do it.
But I'm going to go with the Jets yes. 3.5.
Zach against, Wilson's back, baby.
Against Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God.
Zach Wilson can't be worse than what we've seen. What he gives the Jets.
Sorry.
What he gives the Jets is. What he gives the Jets is a little tiny bit more horizontal movement back there than what we've seen. And I am picking this as a vengeance pick against Pittsburgh. Of course, Pittsburgh. Words cannot express what Pittsburgh did to blow not just the game, but the spread last week. And so there it is. The pickings are slim. We got a road dog. We got a quarterback coming back. And we have a functionless, broken down, horrible looking, horizontal offense with Pittsburgh. Go look up Trubisky's.
Okay.
All right. Enough out of you, Peter.
Look up Trubisky's pass charts last week and you'll see what I mean.
Abershaw, you're up, buddy.
All right. With the number 5 pick, Jordan, good luck with the Seahawks this week. I am going to go with Jacksonville +6.5, riding the Jaguars. At Philadelphia. Look, the Jags are the big Cinderella team of this season, as I predicted. And I also think that when you look at what they have done, not just covering the spread over the last two games, they've obliterated the spread. They covered by a whopping 61.5 points over the last 2 weeks. If you convert that over to their week 4 game against the Eagles, I think the Eagles are a little tad overrated. Jacksonville going into Philadelphia, I'm really liking this 6.5. They might not win this game, but I feel like that is a long, long spread for the Jaguars, who are the best team by SRS in the AFC. So I'm going with the Jacksonville Jaguars, which means that Seattle. Jordan, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I get stuck with the Seahawks getting 4 at the Lions. I have nothing good to say about this because I think they suck. I guess the only thing I can say is that anytime the Lions are favored at home, let alone by more than a field goal, you probably have a chance. So, yay, go Geno.
Were you hoping I took the Hawks there?
Honestly, I would rather have the Jaguars, but, the Eagles are playing so well, too. I don't feel good about any of these.
Isn't it time for Detroit to start winning some of these close games? So, yeah, that's a sad situation. Anytime you look up the Jacksonville Jaguars coming off of how many games did they win last season? The Jags. Was it 2? Was it 1? Anyway, when you look at the Jags and you see that they are the highest rated team by SRS – in the AFC. I think even though they're the underdogs, they're probably the ones due for a little more regression than Philadelphia in that game.
Yeah, I'm just feeling a little bit, I guess, after Clemson just beat us in overtime, double overtime, now I'm going with Trevor Lawrence. It feels dirty. Feels dirty going with Trevor Lawrence, but now I got to.
They won three games last year, by the way, Peter, three.
I don't know how many minutes this will be edited down to. If you take out everything I've said, that'll get you, save you 15 or 16 minutes. But we're now an hour and 2 minutes. We made it an hour and 2 minutes into talking, Jordan, before Wake Forest came up. I think that's a record for the Underdogs podcast. So
they covered 6 points. Yeah. Yeah. Spread was 7. All right. We have some baseball to talk. The feverishly hot corner, Peter Keating, has some information about Aces, the team that won the WNBA finals, won that championship. But we're not talking about them. We're going to talk about Aces in baseball. That's right. You were very confused about my segue there, my little detour.
I thought you might go Ace of Base instead of the Vegas Aces.
He saw the sign, and it's about to open up your mind. Let's go, Peter, with your...
You can't make me laugh this week.
Feeling hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot.
Okay, last week on this very show, our own Jordan Brenner, through no fault of his own, said that strong starting pitching is probably the one thing you can depend on to matter in the baseball postseason.
I have no recollection of ever saying that, by the way. This is fake news.
No, I'm not hassling you or anything. I think it's...
He's using you to dunk on you here real quick.
Yeah, I'm his foil.
I think it's what most smart people think, including most baseball executives. You want to get great starting pitching and line it up for the postseason, and that's how you win. And in case you're wondering where that thought started, well, back in the 1905 World Series, I know Tom likes it when I go deep and historical, Christy Mathewson of the New York Giants, he threw 3 shutouts in a week. That's what won the Giants the World Series. And baseball fans of a certain age remember Bob Gibson.
A certain age, 150 years old? Oh.
Well, not 120 years ago. Okay. But, you know, when you think about Bob Gibson dominating the World Series, or even Madison Bumgarner, right? Won 3 games back in 2014, I think it is. It seems like of all the things that we might think give teams a big boost, one of the surest bets is concentrating playoff innings in a terrific arm or arms. However, research shows that at least in this wild card era, that is not true.
Ooh.
I looked up, I drew up a list of the 50 best starting pitching seasons of the wild card era, just based on FIP, basically looking at fielding independent pitching, which was at least 50% above average by starters who threw at least 200 innings. And that goes from Pedro Martinez back in 1999 to Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom in the past couple of years, and Gerrit Cole. And if you look at it, these super aces, on average, their teams won about 88 games per season. So which fits because they're about 7 to 10 war a piece. These are really great baseball seasons. 53% of those teams made the playoffs, the teams that those big time pitchers were on.
Yeah, the super aces, yes.
Right. Those playoff teams with super aces then won an average of 1.1 postseason series, and they went a little bit above 500 in the postseason, which might sound impressive because anytime you're above 500 in the playoffs, it's a good thing. But those teams are all good teams.
Yeah, so their expected wins is probably what, like 1.3, right? And they ended up at 1.1, or expected series wins?
Yeah, exactly. So we would expect those teams to win 51% of their matchups. They actually won 52.7% of their matchups. So you have a super ace, it increases your team of winning a postseason, chances of winning a postseason game on average by about 1.7 percentage points. That's it.
Oh, so it makes you a little bit better, but it's a little overrated.
It makes you a tiny bit better. But look, teams win World Series by hitting the crap out of the ball, like the 2013 Red Sox. Teams win the World Series by having great bullpens, particularly strikeout arms in the bullpens. They can also win the playoff series by having aces, but aces are no guarantee. And this maybe shouldn't be a huge surprise because so many teams have to use those aces, first of all, just to make the playoffs, and nowadays to win a wild card game or two. So when you do see a starter who is great across many innings in the playoffs, I mean, that's impressive, but it's much less of a guarantee than I would have thought to actually succeed in these shorter series.
So DeGrom, is that why you did this?
Well, I mean, I thought that DeGrom and Scherzer together would be a big boost, but maybe not so much. I also was thinking about, I mean, so much of what I do is influenced by hearing Yankee fans complain on sports radio.
That's why I got into this business. Yep.
And they have assumed that.
Why does it Derek Jeter get another gold glove? He's so good on those throws in the hole. Oh, I love it. He's
And now they're all aghast because they don't think that Gerrit Cole is at his peak anymore. And they don't have like the super aces to go up with a Verlander or a Valdez or a DeGrom or a Scherzer. And they're kind of acting doomstruck, you know, unless Gerrit Cole is like the Gerrit Cole of 2017. Yankee fans think they don't have the pitching to compete in the playoffs.
I actually don't agree. As a Yankee fan, the thing that worries me least is their starting pitching. I'm much more worried about the bullpen, to be honest. But
really?
For another time, yes.
Do you think the health is going to improve or the usage is going to... I mean, they're going to stop using guys who aren't effective. Do you think they
No, they don't have... But no one's been really... Compared to their normal bullpens, no one's been effective. They don't have a closer. They're basically just throwing stuff against a wall right now and hoping something sticks. Their starting pitching is good.
Except for our boy, right? Our boy, Lou Trevino.
They're throwing Loaiza out there. Scott Efros is going to close some games. It's just a mix and match fiasco. That's the issue. I don't have anyone confidence that anyone can get big outs late in the game. I think Cole, Cortez, Severino, and Tyone is a perfectly fine four guys in the playoffs.
1.74 ERA, Lou Trevino right now for the Yankees. 1.74.
There you go. Put Trevino and Efros into the two top roles. And then Brian Cashman should just, you know, drop the trophy and walk away, right? I mean, he takes so much abuse. All he does is acquire good arms, and they all end up, all end up throwing 5 miles an hour faster.
Yeah, Frankie Montas was awesome.
He was hurt when they got him.
Sucks.
So we have to even deal with the Yankee fans on our own show, but that's okay. I was even surprised by how if you have two super aces, that's no guarantee of anything. Tom, you'll remember that. The Red Sox in 2018 beat the Astros when they had Gerrit Cole and Verlander, both as 20-game winners. Mm. But Boston won that series. Right. Boston scored 876 runs that year. They won the playoffs in the World Series by hitting the snot out of the ball. They won 108 games. They were only third in the league in ERA, and they were World Series champions. For some reason, fans don't focus on teams like that as much as they do on the dominant starters. You know, the Diamondbacks, when they had Schilling and Randy Johnson, they got swept by the Cardinals in 2002. And the Cardinals were throwing guys out there like Chuck Finley and Andy Benes. And I hate to keep saying anything can happen in small sample sizes, but anything can happen in small sample sizes. So I'm a little more worried now as a Mets fan. You got to play better than your best starting pitcher. And your best starting pitcher doesn't guarantee you anything, I guess, is the lesson. So there's even more lessons of chaos. And I'm still looking for what actually does. I don't know. I mean, if we can get down to a granular level.
It's just randomness. It's just getting hot at the right time. That's it.
Of finding anything that does work. It's getting to be like hockey, right? I mean, there's no question hot goalies win playoff series. The only problem is, you don't know which goalie's going to get hot until after it happens.
Speaking of hot, that was a feverishly hot corner by Peter Keating. Thank you so much for that analysis. And I will be using that analysis to continue to hate on the Yankees as they make their trudge with Drudge toward a first round exit for division series exit in this year's playoffs, Major League Baseball playoffs. So
yeah, now that Minnesota is out of the playoffs, the Yankees have to be really worried because they're actually going to have to show up and play in the first round.
No, they won't because they won't even be playing in the first round.
I mean, for their first series.
Have you seen, by the way, that this ridiculous new postseason in the league, in both the division series and the championship series, there's no day off between in the division series between games 4 and 5. and the championship series between 5 and 6. So there's no travel day. So like if you have a, let's say the Mets are playing the Dodgers in the LCS, they've got to theoretically play game 5, fly all the way across the country, I guess overnight, and play a game the next day. It's ridiculous.
I did not see that. And I wonder if that means teams will try to send the next day's starting pitcher across the country early, which would make it really interesting if like that turns into a 16 inning game.
They've done that in the past, but I know the season got pushed back a little bit, but I hate this new playoff. I hate the adding of another team. It's watering it down. It's making a random situation even more random. But I mean, how can you play a game the next day across the country? It's ridiculous.
I don't know. Didn't they used to have 5-game series where you play it on a weekend and maybe on a Wednesday if people felt like it?
What was that voice?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the old guy saying things are just getting worse and worse and worse.
All right, well, I'm going to go yell at a cloud.
My name's Jordan. I'm going to go blow my gun off at the cats next door now because I hate everything. Ah, what the hell?
I do hate cats. It's true. Yeah.
Maze is chiming in. It's the time to rap voice. That's it. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's Underdogs podcast. Go follow Jordan Brenner at Jordan Brenner on Twitter and Peter Keating at Peter Keating NJ, not MJ, on Twitter. And also go follow our friend of the program, Chris Raybon, at Chris Raybon. All right, fellas, can't wait to see what happens with that Miami Dolphins game.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets.
Go Gino.
L-L-L.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.